step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm bringing Hassel back.
Get your sexy on.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live from The Game Studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, just did an epic crash and burn for this Titans team. 7 straight losses. They lose the division. They miss the playoffs. The first losing season in Mike Vrabel's tenure as head coach of the Tennessee Titans. But they made the moves that they felt deemed necessary. Some of the moves that they thought could have, you know, can fix that 7-game losing streak moving forward. Of course, most notably, moving on from offensive coordinator Todd Downing. But I think the next question is, we all understand why Todd Downing got fired, but the next question is, who should be that next offensive coordinator that comes in? Any hot names that you have heard attached to the Tennessee Titans?
You know, I have not heard any names, but, you know, a guy off the top of my head would actually be Zach Robinson. You know, he's coached with the Rams. He's, you know, kind of been around Sean McVay. That situation there could change. And so, you know, if that situation changed and you just think about, you know, what Mike Vrabel did, you know, at the coordinator position, obviously hired, you know, Matt LaFleur before, you know, he left and got the job, you know, in Green Bay. And so when you look at that and you just look at maybe some of the things that he had been interested in terms of what he was looking for in an offensive coordinator, you know, I think, you know, in that, you know, from that perspective, that would be a name that I would think would be of interest to Mike Vrabel.
And whatever they choose to do with at the offensive coordinator position, there's also a really big decision to make in terms of on-the-field personnel. Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, how this offense decides to move forward and what the foundation of this offense will be. If you are the general manager of the Titans, do you move forward with Ryan Tannehill and or Derrick Henry, or do you decide to move forward with something else?
No, I definitely move forward with Ryan Tannehill for sure, and then with Derrick Henry also. You know, part of, I think, what I would say about, you know, Ryan Tannehill, and I think this ends up being the case, like I said this a while back, I think he's more a candidate for you know, a renegotiation than to be a cap casualty. And I think you can get, you know, worse, you know, easier than you can get better at the position. So you just look at, you know, kind of what happened this season. So now, all that to say, I definitely would be aware of the quarterback market, like what's going to happen with Jimmy Garoppolo, what's going to happen with Derek Carr. You know, there's going to be movement for sure, and there are going to be openings as well. Does Tom Brady retire? You know, what's the situation, you know, out at the Rams? So I think there's – it definitely needs some monitoring. But I also think that, you know, with Ryan Tannehill, like I can't say that I feel like, you know, he was given the best opportunity to have a ton of success, you know, with the receiver situation. Now, when he had, you know, probably the appropriate players around him, I think he played well. And I think that's kind of, you know, why we saw what happened with John Robinson. So I think I look at all of those situations, I would approach it as if Ryan Tannehill was going to be back and be my starter. But I wouldn't be oblivious to what's going on in the quarterback market.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, you bring up Ryan Tannehill. Well, Caroline brought up Ryan Tannehill, and sort of Vrabel's non-committal but committal to Ryan Tannehill. I think a lot of it has to do possibly with the new GM, whether the new GM wants to go that route or not. But do you think that this team, considering where they're at and considering, I believe this is the this offseason is probably the most critical offseason that Vrabel has had since he's been here moving forward. Do you think they possibly even take a shot at, you know, you talk about Derek Carr, you talk about Garoppolo, but those guys are just guys that are going to hold a place for maybe a two years, 3 years at most. Do you think they go up in the draft potentially to try to get their quarterback? Because I think if they can get inside the top six, maybe five, then they still would have an opportunity to get the quarterback of their future, because every other team in their division is going to have their quarterback.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, it's still early on the draft in terms of these quarterbacks and where I would think that they end up, how good they are, all that stuff. I guess I would just say this, you know, in terms of, you know, Ryan Tannehill, he's made a lot of money, like the last couple of years. So, you know, just looked it up. He's due a base salary of $27 million next year. You know, he's your starting quarterback. Next season, it's a $36 million cap hit. Now, that, like, then you can get out, you know, really after that. And while that sounds like an enormous amount of money, like, we need to remind ourselves that, like, there are a ton of quarterbacks now making more than $40 million a year, right? So you are no longer at the top of the quarterback market when you talk about, like, what you're paying your quarterback. And it kind of allows you to be wide open the following year. So I think he's my quarterback in 2023. I really do. And I think then at that point you can start to figure out, okay, well, what's the quarterback class, you know, that year behind it, you know, end up looking like, and do you start preparing yourself, you know, for that? So I don't know that I would be in a situation right now. Look, I didn't think that the Raiders should have basically, I mean, the Raiders essentially signaled they're moving on from Derek Carr right now. Like, I don't think they should have done it. Now, his contract was such that, you know, they were going to have to make a decision on a roster bonus right after the Super Bowl. But the reality is like $33 million, I think it was, for Derek Carr to be your starter in 2023. Like, to me, that's not a bad deal. Like, in fact, I would argue that it's a good deal when you look at what some of the other contracts offer players. I think what the last thing you want to do is wind up in a scenario like Cleveland's in with Watson or Denver's in with Russell Wilson. To me, I would kind of get to the end of it before I address it, where I can then either go into the draft and get somebody, or, you know, I can, you know, really find somebody they want in free agency.
But do you think that because of what we've seen with Cincinnati, because of what we've seen with the Chargers, and maybe, you know, Miami to an extent, you see what Philadelphia is doing with these young quarterbacks, and they've been able to, in a short amount of time, get their quarterback and also build their roster. Do you think the Titans, is that feasible for this team to do? And still hold on to Ryan Tannehill,
yeah,
in a sense.
Here's what I would say. Here's what I say. It's why you hear Mike Tannenbaum right now talking about, if he were Ryan Poles, the Bears GM, that he would trade Justin Fields for a boatload of picks.
Oh no,
and he would take a quarterback with the number one overall pick. He basically said, look, get a player that's, you know, probably a better passer, maybe just as good, maybe a better prospect. And reset your timeline on the quarterback, load up with picks, and because it essentially allows you to kind of reset on how you've been trying to rebuild your roster, right? So, like, is that the right formula? Like, yeah, that is the right formula. I guess what I would say is, Like, I feel like the Titans aren't at that spot right now. I just, because I think that if you were going to move on from Ryan Tannehill, then you would have to, you know, you would, I think you would be in a scenario where you were moving on also from Derrick Henry. I think you would have to question whether or not that, you know, re-signing Jeffrey Simmons was really what you wanted to do, because I think you're too far off from that window of being good. You know, like if your plan is to win with a quarterback on his rookie contract, like look back, like Cincinnati wasn't good year one with him. You know, same thing obviously with Philadelphia. So, you know, really your window starts a couple years into that process with a quarterback on his rookie contract.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, he will stick around with us coming up next. We talk about what the Titans' philosophy should be moving forward, but what should the philosophy be as a team as a whole? We'll get into all of that with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. It's Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
This organization would go the path of rebuilding from the bottom up as opposed to running it back with the group that you guys have had over the last couple of years with changes?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a number of things that you could do. It's, you know, I mean, we could, you know, there's a lot of, that's those questions that you ask every year, you know, as you construct a roster, as you, you know, do a lot of different things. And our goals will never change. Our goal is to have a championship football team. Have fallen short, you know, of that. But we still know what wins. We still know, and we're going to win. You know, but again, there's decisions that will be made throughout the season, throughout the off season, excuse me, and you know, starting with, you know, free agency guys that we identify, you know, trying to get somebody hired and looking at where we are with the salary cap and all those things that everybody's concerned about.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel at the podium yesterday. Move forward with the core that you have, run it back, or completely blow it up and quote-unquote rebuild. ESPN NFL analyst is with us, Tim Hasselbeck. So hearing that from Mike Vrabel, didn't necessarily deny the fact that the Titans might be thinking of a rebuild, but didn't also draw a line in the sand and say, this is exactly what we're doing, we're deciding to rebuild. Kind of one foot in, one foot out. Didn't count out the possibility that there could be a rebuild. In your opinion of viewing some teams in the past that have tried to tear it all down and then rebuild it, what's in the Titans' best interest in terms of how they move forward with this team in the core?
Yeah, I don't think you have time to tear it all down and rebuild it. You know, as I listen to him talk, while people think that, if you tear it down, all you are doing is getting it ready for the next coach and the next GM. That's all you are doing. So I think that, you know, the team I think I would look at and say, like, all right, well, like, how have they handled some of these situations would be the Minnesota Vikings. Like, the Vikings fired their head coach. They hired a new coach. Like, they were in a situation where I think a lot of people thought, well, like, listen, you're getting older at certain spots. You're getting older at pass rusher. You're getting older, you know, in the secondary. You know, have a quarterback that a lot of people think, like, isn't good enough to go win at all. Like, you know, they've won 12 games this year. I think the idea of just saying, look, we're going to you know, strip it down to the studs and then, you know, rebuild it, I think you end up getting fired if you do that. So I don't think that'll be the plan. Now, there are going to be a lot of changes. Like, obviously, offensive line, I mean, there's some obvious ones with Ben Jones and Taylor Lewan and, you know, guys that have been cornerstones, if you will, along the offensive line. Like, that'll look like that's going to be different. And so I think that, you know, I think you may see a similar thing on the defensive side of the ball, like, you know, where guys have been really good players. Like, what happens with them? So I think we'll see significant changes. But I don't know that that means, like, the quote-unquote rebuild is really the right path.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And along those lines, Tim, you reminded me of a great story told by the late Floyd Reese. Do you recall this, Tim? It was back when the Browns brought in Paul DePodesta. Now, Paul DePodesta was essential in the Moneyball with Billy Beane and the A's. In fact, in the movie Moneyball, his character is played by Jonah Hill. So just picture Jonah Hill, right, going to the Browns. And he's trying to get this Moneyball philosophy going. And I was a big subscriber to that, right? I had read the book, and I was like, this worked well for the A's. And I'm thinking the Browns might be on the cutting edge here. So I'm having this discussion with Floyd Reese. I'm like, Floyd, look what he's doing. He's trading these assets. He's building more and more assets. He's getting all these draft picks. This is going to be great. And he said exactly what you just said. He goes, you're fired. He says, by the time it starts working, if it starts working, those guys will be gone. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. They never got good. And by the time that it looked like there was any hope, they had moved on from that philosophy and gone in a completely different direction. So that's a really interesting tale of caution, right, in terms of if you want to quote-unquote rebuild.
I just don't think you have the time to do it. Like, look, Matt Rhule in Carolina signed, I think he signed an 8-year contract or something absurd when he signed with the Panthers. But it wasn't working, so he's gone. You know, like, I just, or look at Pete Carroll. Like, look, I think there are a lot of people who are like, what is Pete doing? You know, I mean, and he obviously done a nice job coaching that team, but like this idea of like, hey, we're going to rebuild. Like, I just, you'd get fired. And so I think what you have to do is you just have to get it right in terms of when you move on from an older player, and sometimes it's going to hurt and sometimes it'll be unpopular, but then you've got to beat the market on other stuff and, you know, other players. Like Pete Carroll's situation's working in Seattle because they drafted Kenneth Walker. They got it right on the running back. And because, you know, they felt like Geno Smith, you know, was better than people realized. I mean, there was another team in the NFL that was going to go into the season with Geno Smith as their starting quarterback, but they felt the confidence in doing that. So, you know, a big part of it is, I don't think you can rebuild, but you need to do a really good job of evaluating your own players and knowing when it's time to, you know, move on, and then you've got to beat the market in other spots.
I got one more for you on the Titans, but before I get to that, before we completely turn the page, I am curious your opinion, Tim, on the play that basically ended the Titans season. We might be sitting here talking about a team that scratched their way to one more win and hung on,
yep,
had it not been for the fumble by Josh Dobbs. Now, I think you'll agree with me, Tim. Yep. When you and I were growing up and we were watching NFL games, you were watching your dad play, that play, and I'm talking about pre-replay, that's an incomplete, yep, pass every single time. Right? When the ball physically goes forward, right, that much, and the arm is going forward and his hand still touching the ball, you got the benefit of the doubt every time. But now this is, to me, one of the, right, things that is a byproduct of replay, where you slow it down, you see that the ball is sort of coming out of his hand, even though it's still touching his fingers, and the ball physically goes forward, I don't know, 15 or 20 yards, not, mm-hmm, north and south, but from in the air. So what do you think of that rule?
Yeah, I think your assessment, the way you've described that, is exactly right. Right, that used to be an incomplete pass. Now we've got the super slow mo, especially on games that are important, and so you're getting a look in these camera angles. And when you look at that, the ball is moving in his hand before it comes forward. Now, so it's moving. Does that mean he's lost possession of it at that point? Like, you know, I would argue no, but I think that with the way we do it now, you know, that ball's moving, and so you, much like a player who's going to the ground, if the ball's moving before, you know, his knee hits the ground, that's going to be a fumble. So I guess I would say this. I don't know if I thought you were going to go this direction on it. I think you're right. I did a breakdown on that play on the Van Pelt Sports Center afterwards, and you know, to me, it ends up being one of those scenarios where, like, look, when you sign a quarterback, you know, less than 3 weeks prior to, you know, be your starter, like, you're going to have communication issues, which is exactly what happened. You get a free runner, and the quarterback gets hit in the back, and the ball comes out. Like, you're not going to win very many games that way. You're not. And so if they were going into the postseason this week, something similar is going to happen next week. It just – it's too tall of a task to come in without, you know, a deeper understanding and ability to communicate at that position to have success against good teams. And that's ultimately, like, fumble or no fumble, something bad like that was going to happen this next week.
Okay, so that leads me to the question. Because I'm with you, I think it's smart to bring Ryan Tannehill back again. But to roll the dice again and say if he gets hurt, and of course the odds increase every year a guy gets older, you know, who's the backup? What do you think of the philosophy there? And I guess it comes down to, do you believe Malik Willis can take a giant step forward? Because he was so far from being a solution at all this year. You know, you give him a little slack being a rookie, but, I mean, if you're going to try to win next year, you've got to have a better backup quarterback.
I agree with that, and I think so what I would do is, like, you know, sometimes these teams think, like, oh, you only carry two guys. And it's just not accurate. Like, there are plenty of teams that carry three quarterbacks, and there's a reason that they do it. And so I think based on what I saw from Malik Willis, I would make sure I have somebody else that I think can play. And there's always movement, and there's, you know, there are always situations where, you know, you have somebody that either has some experience or you think has some upside, and I think I would approach it that way. So, yeah, I don't think there's any chance that I am going into the off season with the plan that he's my number two. Now, I'm going to give him an opportunity to be the number two, but I'm not. He doesn't have, like, pole position on that. And the thing that will be somewhat tricky about that is there's going to be a new offense. And, you know, even if it's not completely different terminology, you're going to have a new offensive coordinator, which means you're going to want as many reps as you can for your starter. And, you know, that's going to kind of handcuff to an extent of how you can allow guys to compete for the spots behind them. So I think that, you know, the more we've kind of talked about this, it's an interesting – I think there's a lot of work to be done. You need a new general manager. You need to make some hard decisions on veteran players. You need to hire an offensive coordinator. You need to allow competition at critical positions that are not just starter positions. This is a big offseason, especially when you consider, you know, the direction that Jacksonville's going and, you know, how you stand in the division.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Last one for you, Tim. Titans bringing in a new general manager and looking at, you know, the Pete Carrolls, the Bill Belichicks, the Andy Reids of the NFL, the head coaches that really do play that GM role, the final say kind of coaches. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing when the head coach has final say, or at least more say, in terms of talent acquisition and talent evaluation, whenever they're working more side by side with the GM rather than very clear-cut roles as GM and head coach?
I like when the head coach has final say because, you know, as much as the general manager is involved in the process, you know, the hands-on of actually coaching a player, seeing every interaction in terms of meetings and practice habits and all of those different things, like, it's just too much time. And look, he's the guy that's coaching them. Now, ultimately, you want a great relationship and you want trust between those two spots, but I think there are too many times where, you know, general managers, part of what they're asked to do is to look at, you know, potential and upside and, you know, what somebody can be. And by the time it gets to a coach, you know, now that guy's job is get this guy to play as well as, you know, as good as he can possibly play. And so I like the scenarios of the ones that you kind of, you know, laid out. Look, somebody else in Kansas City is going to pick the players. Andy Reid's going to have a lot of input, but ultimately, you know, Andy Reid's going to have the final say in who's playing and why and who ends up making the team and why, and I think that's the right way to do it.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, we appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right, thanks. That was Tim Hasselbeck. He joins us every Tuesday at noon. Coming up next, that's what I want to get into. He says he thinks it's a good thing when the head coach has final say. Is it a good thing if this coach has final say? We'll get into that coming up next. Plus, your thoughts, your calls, your texts, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
I like when the head coach has final say because, you know, as much as the general manager is involved in the process, you know, the hands-on of actually coaching a player, seeing every interaction in terms of meetings and practice habits and all of those different things, like, it's just too much time. And look, he's the guy that's coaching them. Now, ultimately, you want a great relationship and you want trust between those two spots, but I think there are too many times where, you know, general managers, part of what they're asked to do is to look at, you know, potential and upside and, you know, what somebody can be. And by the time it gets to a coach, you know, now that guy's job is get this guy to play as well as, you know, as good as he can possibly play. And so I like the scenarios of the ones that you kind of, you know, laid out. Look, somebody else in Kansas City is going to pick the players. Andy Reid's going to have a lot of input. But ultimately, you know, Andy Reid's going to have the final say in who's playing and why and who ends up making the team and why. And I think that's the right way to do it.
There you go. That was ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck who joined us in the last segment. I asked him, hey, you know, looking at the new dynamic between Mike Vrabel and the new general manager, the word that keeps being used over and over and over again is collaboration. It was used by Amy Adams Strunk. It was used by Mike Vrabel when he was at the podium yesterday, that he and the GM and Amy Adams Strunk, they're going to be collaborative with the jobs at hand. And I interpret that as Mike Vrabel will play a larger role within talent evaluation, talent acquisition, that he will play a little bit more of a general manager role than he has in the past. Now, who has final say? Is that Mike Vrabel or is that the general manager? That's not a question that Mike Vrabel answered, and I don't think it's a question that he wants to answer. But I think it's interesting moving forward, since that is a possibility that we could be going into an era of Titans football where Mike Vrabel follows the Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll model of, yeah, the general manager is there to do general manager duties, but really the head coach has final say. Now, I have a thought on that, but Tim Hasselbeck says he thinks it's overall a good thing. If Mike Vrabel did have final say, if he did play the Bill Belichick role in 2023 and beyond, do you think that's a good or bad thing?
No, go ahead, Willie. Go ahead.
Well, you know, this is what comes to mind for me. I do think checks and balances are important. I think if one guy has too much say, it's probably not a good thing. I think you need somebody that, even if Mike Vrabel does technically have the last say, I think somebody has got to challenge him. So he's got to have enough respect for the person that is in the GM position to have a strong disagreement and tell him what he doesn't want to hear. It can't just be a yes man. You know what I mean? Like, collaborative is a good word, but it's got to be real collaboration. And I think he had that with John Robinson. I think he felt pretty good about his relationship with John Robinson more often than not. I think for sure the A.J. Brown thing was the turning point, I think, on the whole thing. But that trade, I think, changed everything in a lot of ways. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but I think that was, you can look back on it. That is going to be a big, big theme when we look back 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and say, why did they fire a guy that had a 61% winning percentage at the time? That's going to be the headline, right? Do we disagree? But, you know, but so this next guy that's coming in, if he has the, because clearly John Robinson had the final say there. And if we're going to flip it, you know, is it just going to be everything that Mike Vrabel wants? Does Mike Vrabel have the scope to be able to understand what the general manager's job is and how difficult that job is? Because I don't think I subscribe to the philosophy that you cannot do both. You cannot do both well. You're a coach or a GM. Being both is tough, but I do think he should have a lot of say. I don't know that the coach should have the final say, though. I don't know if I agree with Tim on that one.
What does coaches, head coaches, say, or even Vrabel has said it? We've heard Bill Belichick say it. We've heard Nick Saban say it. Listen, do your job. Don't try to do nobody else's job. Do your job and that job effectively, okay? Because if you do your job, then you got to trust that everybody else around you is doing their job. That's how, you know, that's how coaches relay the message to players. Do your job. Don't try to do nobody else's job. If it calls for you to hit the A gap, then hit it. Don't try to hit the B gap because you don't think the guy next to you is going to get to the B gap. No, do your job and trust that the other guy is going to do his, because I don't want to turn on a film. You try to do his job and then end up messing up everything. That's how I sort of look at it from a coach GM standpoint. There are designated jobs for everybody to do. And I'm not sitting here saying that, hey, listen, Mike Vrabel can't do that job. I can't say he can't do it because he's never done it. So I don't have any reference to look back to and say, oh, he did that in Houston and you see how that went. Now, we can go back and say, well, Bill O'Brien can't do it because he tried it. But we can go to Bill Belichick and say Bill Belichick can do it because he's done it for the longest. So there are situations that will work and there are situations that don't work. But I think the only way it works is if you have the most important position on the field fixed for the next 10 years, and that's the quarterback position. And right now, the Tennessee Titans are not at that point. So to me,
that's going to make every GM better, every coach better.
Exactly.
If you have the quarterback, there's no question about it. And you know, we can talk about other sports where it's the same thing. The goalie in hockey, mm-hmm. the pitcher, the pitching in baseball. Let me throw this at you guys, all right? Do you think maybe Mike Vrabel might ask Amy Adams Strunk, saying, look, I don't want to make every decision. I want a collaboration. I don't want to be, quote, the GM and the coach. But I want the ability to veto a trade like the one that traded A.J. Brown. He clearly didn't want that. He'll never say that on the record. But do you think maybe that's what he would like out of this, the ability to veto something like that? What do you guys think of that?
I think that it can be a positive thing, but also sometimes a slippery slope. That I think that you need to have one designated person that makes the final decisions. Because if you grant Mike Vrabel veto power, but only for trades or only for drafting or whatever it might be, I think you'll get into a really difficult power struggle. That I think in all operations, there needs to be one person where everyone's voices are heard, whether that's, you know, the coaches, Amy Adams Strunk, Mike Vrabel, the GM, everyone's voices are heard, but there is one sole person who has final say in trades, in drafting, in free agent signing, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. That whenever you grant that power sometimes, or whenever you grant that power in certain situations, you can have a really difficult dichotomy of power there. And I think that Mike Vrabel is the kind of coach that it's not going to work very well if it only is sometimes and other times, you know, it's the GM. I think that in any structure where you have alpha males, type A people, the kind of guys that Mike Vrabel is, and that's not a bad thing at all. I think that's what makes Mike Vrabel so great, is that if you have an alpha dog, a type A kind of person, I think the power structure needs to be very clearly defined, and it needs to be clearly defined from the beginning.
Well, we gotta you know, look at this from, okay, when Robinson was here, was it that relationship where it went back and forth, where they both bounced players off of one another? And yes, they talked about it extensively. Vrabel gave his input. John gave his, but ultimately, because John's the GM, you know, okay, this is what we're going with. Are you okay with it? Are you 100? Are we good? Yes, we're good. Okay. If we look at it from that standpoint, then does Vrabel have the ability to then go out and get players and evaluate them. If they did it that way where both of them sort of had a hand in it, then I would say, yeah, I think he can do the job, even though, you know, his title didn't say GM when Robinson was here. If they had that type of relationship, then I would think, well, yeah, at least he has some experience at sort of evaluating it, going back and forth, and then say, okay, this is what I want. But if it was solely on Robinson, then what makes you think he then can go out and do that job that Robinson did, and Robinson was just the GM? Alone, he wasn't a hit. He was the GM, and he went out and did that job. And it, at times it was good, and at times it wasn't. So, to me, if you had a hand in that, then honestly, you could look at it from two ways. If you had a hand in what was going on, and y'all were like joined at the hip, that's a good thing. But it also could be a bad thing because this roster isn't good. So I don't want you nowhere near picking people for this roster. I will tell you, you can look at them and say, yeah, I prefer this guy and this, but ultimately it's my decision, because when you had an opportunity to help make decisions, look where this roster is at. So if that is indeed the case, then I don't want you touching this roster from an evaluation standpoint of who we bring in and who we cut and who we don't.
And I think that's just a really massive undertaking.
Yeah.
And I hear Tim Hasselbeck that it makes sense. Hey, if you're going to be cooking the meal, you should pick the groceries too. And it makes sense when you look at examples like Bill Belichick and Andy Reid, Super Bowl winning coaches, that, hey, they do it. Sure, it's a good thing. But I think that every example is different. You know, Andy Reid has been a head coach in the NFL for almost as long as I have been alive. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick has been a head coach in the league for off and on for 25 years, and he's been in the league for, you know, 40 years. Mike Vrabel's been a head coach in the league since 2018. I think it would be a really difficult undertaking and a really big step forward for Mike Vrabel's role to not just go from, you know, and I don't want to undermine the job of an NFL head coach. It's a massive job. But right now his job is, what's the game plan? How are we going to execute that game plan? How are we going to give our players the best opportunity to win? How are we going to be able to best effectively communicate this game plan and get there? But whenever your job goes from that to now, it's, okay, let's figure out a practice and a game plan, and then after that, you're going to be looking at tape from, you know, a South Dakota State long snapper. And now you're going to the Senior Bowl. Now you're going to the East-West Shrine Game. Now your role is so much bigger. That's a really massive undertaking for somebody who really hasn't been a head coach in the league for a very long time. I'm not saying Mike Vrabel can't do it. Mike Vrabel is a hell of a coach. He's a good coach. A great coach. But that's a really big step forward when you go from head coach to now head coach and GM. And I don't know if that's going to be the power dichotomy moving forward, but Mike Vrabel didn't count it out. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a thought on that, we'll get to your calls and your texts. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game.
Do you ask for your input on anyone that you may already know that you would have a preference for? A preference?
Yeah, I mean, we've had conversations about it. So I would just say that those were good conversations, you know, open conversations. So, yeah, it's not like Amy's kept me in the dark about the process and how that's going.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel on his input on who will be the new general manager. We had Tim Hasselbeck, NFL analyst for ESPN, on earlier. He said, hey, I think it's a good thing whenever coaches have the final say. If you're going to be cooking the dinner, you should do the groceries. And I understand that line of thinking, but I look at it with Vrabel that I don't know if it's the best thing for this football team for Mike Vrabel to wear both of those hats. But let's get into your thoughts on it. Your calls, your texts, phone lines are from my Wilson County, Hyundai.com, 615-737-1025. If you have a thought, one texter texts in and says Amy plans to break the tie. Well, that doesn't make me feel much better. I think Amy Adams Strunk is a wonderful woman. I think she is a good businesswoman. I think she is a good person. But if Amy Adams Strunk has the final say in terms of who the Titans are going to draft, I don't think that's very good. Amy Adams Strunk has never been the kind of owner that's super involved in talent evaluation and acquisition. That doesn't mean that she can't start now. But I don't view Amy Adams Strunk as being the football mastermind or football genius, as most owners are not. That owners are saying, hey, I hire a GM and I hire a coach to make those decisions for me. I don't think that's a good place to be in if Amy is the one with final say.
Well, ultimately, because this is her team, she does have, and theoretically, she does have final say. But I understand what you're saying.
Right.
You don't want it to have to come down because you feel that she's hired smart people. She's hired a GM that understands and knows football. She's hired a head coach that knows the exact same thing. So she would defer to them. Now, they may come to her and give her everything that she needs to make a decision, but ultimately, you rely on those people that you hired, those experts that you hired, to make a decision that's best for your team moving forward. Now, you know, whether Vrabel wants to shop for the grocery and cook, that's a different story. I don't know. But sometimes you don't have to shop for the grocery in order to cook a good meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone else can shop for the grocery, bring it home, and then you cook a five-star Michelin meal. That can be done. And that's what the Titans thought they were doing when they hired John Robinson. And it seemed like it was going that way until it wasn't. That John went out and evaluated the players along with the scouts. And then, you know, they discussed it, but it was ultimately John's probably decision to make the moves that they made or sign the guys that they signed or draft. But then it was up to Vrabel to be the Michelin chef and to make sure that we go out there and we put the best product, we put an A-plus product on the field. You did the shopping, you brought the grocery in. Now it's my responsibility to make sure when we open those doors that when the people come in here, they get a good meal. And when they get a good meal, what happens? They keep coming back. And you know what happens when they keep coming back? We make more money. What happens when you make more money? Then everything else falls into place. Super Bowls and everything else. So he can, you know, this whole thing goes, I want to shop and cook. No, you can cook and cook very well, but then you can get somebody that can shop and know what they're doing. So I don't know. Again, he's never done it, so I can't say that he can't do it. But why would you, unless this is what you want, this is what you eventually want to segue into it, being a GM, Why then do you want all of that responsibility? Oh, and then I got to coach my team on a Sunday or Monday or Thursday.
You know, this is an interesting time to bring up a little history. And Derek, I'd be curious, you know, your awareness of this dynamic while you were there. But, you know, my first experience as an NFL market, covering an NFL market, I was watching Floyd Reese and Jeff Fisher interact. Right. And you had it, the whole thing that got me started on this was when Caroline brought up, well, the tiebreaker could be Amy Adams Strunk. Well, back then, the tiebreaker was Bud Adams. But Bud Adams was a wild card who was aging, who was living in Houston and rarely around the team. You know, he was just all getting phone calls from both sides if there was a disagreement. And there did become disagreements. Right. There was some over assistant coaches. Jeff Fisher did not have the final say in personnel, but he wanted more say. He was fighting for more say. And that was an interesting thing to watch. And remember, for a time, they brought in Jeff Diamond to sort of, quote unquote, break the tie. They brought in, he was an executive for the Minnesota Vikings who had been very successful. They brought him in. So that was a power struggle that happened for a long time. And those guys lasted a lot longer than most people do in their jobs. And they had plenty of success, but it was interesting to watch from where we sat, because eventually Jeff Diamond got fired. They both didn't like that. Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese were like, let's get this guy out of here. I liked it better before. And eventually it was Floyd Reese that was fired before Jeff Fisher. And then Jeff Fisher lasted maybe a few more years after that. But what was your perspective on that, Derek, or players even aware of how that works?
Well, I don't think players were too aware you know, whatever the dynamic was, because it seemed like, you know, at least from my young NFL eyes, that there was a clear cut, you know, p- power structure. It was, and not power in a bad way, it was Floyd and then Jeff. And then once they brought in Jeff Diamond, who I think the world of, it was Floyd, or you can say it was Jeff, Floyd, and then Fisher. So now after I left, I don't know what it became, but there was a, at least in my eyes, there was a clear cut who was the GM and who was the head coach at that time. Now, again, Willie, when I left in 04, after the 04 season, I don't know what happened. It didn't seem right. Like anything good happened once we all left. But before that, there was a clear cut. Like, okay, Floyd's the GM, Jeff's the coach, and then Jeff Diamond is the president, Floyd's the GM, and Jeff's the coach. Jeff Fisher's the coach. I don't think it ever got outside of that, at least when I was here. Now, again, once I left, things changed, and there could have been a power struggle.
I think that's an important point. I agree with you. Floyd Reese was always the GM. Jeff Fisher was always the coach. But Jeff Fisher wanted more. He wanted influence. He wanted more say. In fact, after it was over, remember when Floyd Reese went and started working with the Patriots after he was fired by the Titans? And there was that famous game. And Derek, you were playing for the Ravens, but this was a 59-0 whitewashing up in Foxborough. And it put the Titans, I think, 0-5 or 0-6. I mean, it was a down time for the Titans. Sally Reese, bless her heart, she called our show and just lit into kind of a revenge, a scathing phone call. Of course, Floyd was not aware that she was doing this, but she called to defend Floyd and just went through several examples in her own way of where Jeff had tried to check and end around Floyd for the power struggle, right? It was really eye-opening. It was quite entertaining, right? It was a little unprofessional maybe, but we certainly were sitting there going, wow, this is some very interesting radio here. But it just sort of illustrated what can happen behind the scenes. So who knows what it was like behind the scenes, for example, when that trade was about to go down. I would have loved to have seen the hours leading up to the A.J. Brown trade and what really happened between the two parties. Because it's really a lesson to be learned going forward on how is it going to be the next time they have to make a really tough decision. And it's GM on one side, coach on the other, and who has the final say? It's an important question.
Well, I like what you said earlier, Willie. I believe you said it. Correct me if I'm wrong. In regards to the GM, and it might not have been you, I'm sorry, Willie, but in regards to the GM being a former player or, you know, a former coach, that's why I think Floyd was so good at his job, because not only was Floyd a former player, but he was a former coach. So he understood how to evaluate players, and he coached for a while. So when he gets into the GM role, I don't think there's no question in regards to if this GM knows his job or not. Well, hell, he's been a coach. He's been a player. He understands it. And not all players can segue into that. But Floyd was able to do that, go from player to coach to GM. And he did his job very well. So, you know, I hope in getting their new GM, it's more so a GM in that line, a guy that has been a coach. A guy that possibly has played, that understands how that whole dynamic works. I think it would only be better for the relationship with the head coach moving forward.
Georgia beats TCU in the national championship by the largest margin in the history of a college bowl game. And it was in the national title game. Absolutely ridiculous game last night. Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, will join us to break it all down and what college football looks like moving forward. We'll get into that with Mitch Light coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.